the most beautiful thing we can experience is the mysterious. It is the source of all true art and all science. He to whom this emotion is a stranger, who can no longer pause to wonder and stand rapt in awe, is as good as dead. His eyes are closed. And this week's opening quote comes from Albert Einstein. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I'll be your host for the next hour. And it's good to be back, folks. I've been away for a couple of months, travelling about the place, doing a series of talks and catching up with people. And my God, the world has certainly gone through some changes in the last couple of months. We've got the war unfolding in Ukraine, the war unfolding in Syria. We've got wars unfolding all over the place. We've got the mysterious and well-funded and well-organized terror group ISIS, or ISIL, or whatever you want to call them, appear to be virtually all over the place now, quite suddenly, I might add. They just seem to have sprung from nowhere with the weapons from hell. And quite predictably, there is, of course, a whole bunch of new anti-terror legislation being introduced in all of our countries as a result. It's certainly the case here in Australia. And the global situation seems to be deteriorating rapidly and our freedoms going rapidly downhill at the same time. Isn't it amazing how these terror groups seem to spring up right when Western governments need them? Amazing, really, isn't it? Amazing synchronicity. Oh, look, we want to pull troops out of Iraq. Oh, look, but we can't because now there is this ISIS terrorist group there. We're going to have to increase troops in Iraq and commence bombing raids against Iraq. And oh look, the world doesn't want us to bomb Syria. Oh, but oh dear, we're going to have to because now there is this ISIL terrorist group in Syria. Of course, it is the terrorist group that we've been funding for the whole time and supplying arms to because we called them a legitimate resistance to Bashar Assad for a while. But now we realize that they're a terrorist group, so we're going to have to go in and bomb the country anyway. And look, I wonder where all of the ISIS terrorists in Iraq right over the border are getting all of these wonderful new American weapons from. It could be because they are getting them from the terrorist group we are channeling weapons to straight over the border in Syria. It's amazing, really, isn't it? I mean, it's a merry gun round, folks. We're supplying terrorists with weapons in Syria, and these terrorists are funneling these weapons over the border to the same terrorist group in Iraq whom we are bombing. And now that we've got enough weapons supplied to Syria to make them a little bit of a threat, we can now call them a terrorist group, and we can go and bomb both countries. It's absolutely incredible, and all right on cue, just as the West needs its new boogeyman. Of course, Al-Qaeda was running out of steam. Al-Qaeda was very passé, especially since Osama bin Laden has been killed now. And so, of course, a new terrorist group was wanted. And, of course, we have to stand up against these terrible Islamic militants because they are such a threat to Israel, even though they seem to attack everywhere except Israel. We see these terrorist groups, they blow up buildings in the United States, they blow up trains in England, they blow up trains in Madrid, they hack off the heads of British and Americans on television, and yet they're all such a threat to Israel, and yet they seem to attack everybody but Israel. Amazing. And what else has been happening? Well, we've still had these drone strikes being carried out in Pakistan as well. Actually, they did the math the other day, and they figured out that they kill 49 civilians for every one possible terrorist that they get with these drone strikes. So that's an average of 1 in 50 are actually people that they're targeting. The rest of them are just collateral damage. And of course, this is condoned by the Obama regime. I mean, what a wonderful way to bring freedom and democracy to the world and to garner the love and respect that the West craves so much. Just carry out drone strikes and wanton terror attacks, killing 50 to 1 innocent people, and claim that you're bringing peace and security to the world by doing so. I mean, honestly, folks, it's no wonder people hate the United States. It really is. It's no wonder that the world is fed up to their eyeballs with the warmongering and rhetoric that comes out of the United States and out of England and out of my country as well. And now America trying to push Europe into another war. I mean, what is wrong with these people, folks? Well, we know what's wrong with them. They're psychopaths. But the question is, what is wrong with the population? What's it going to take for the population to actually stand up and do something about this? And I believe we can stand up and do something about it, folks. I really do. I think we have all the means we need to do so. But unfortunately, the main ingredient that we're missing is respect, because respect will bring an empowered community, and an empowered community can stand up against anything that any government wants to do. And it's about time we face the fact that our governments have gone rogue. Every single government on this planet has gone rogue, and it's about time we, the people, reined them in and built a better world. We certainly can't wait for them to do it, folks. They're not going to. It has to come down to us. And I think it's about time we stopped sitting on our hands and actually stood up and made a difference. The question is how? How do we make a difference? How do we do something which is not violent and actually make a difference? Because we don't want violence. We don't want revolution. We don't want any of this stuff. We just want a better world. And really, when you look at it, all of the problems that we face come from government, folks. I mean, I've gone through this with you on the show so many times before. All of the problems that we face come from government. All of the social problems, all of the education problems, all the wars, all the pollution, everything comes due to legislation put in place by governments. And so it's up to us to re-establish where we sit in the food chain, which is actually above government. But we need the respect of the community to do it. And this is a perspective that I've been sharing with people for so long now. And everybody is looking for solutions. Everybody's looking for the silver bullet. Everyone's looking for the new system or the mechanism that can be put in place. But no one's prepared to actually do the work themselves, do the groundwork in their own community and get to know their neighbours and get to know the people around them, initiate discussions with people, meetings, group meetings, public meetings, meetings in your town hall, go to parliament meetings, government meetings, council meetings, and make noise. Make noise. Talk to people. Go to your local school, get action happening on the ground in your local school, hand out flyers, do letterbox drops, do whatever you can to spread the word and get your community involved in discussions aimed at removing the criminal element from our governments. And name it for what it is. Name it as a criminal element, because they are. All of these governments are criminal. My government's a criminal government. Of course they are. Every government on this planet is a criminal government. Well, virtually every government on the planet is a criminal government. Anybody who's supporting these wars in Europe, anybody who's supporting Israel and the extermination of the Palestinian people, all of these governments are criminal governments. Let's not beat around the bush with it. It's a fact. And they're going to continue doing what they're doing, and they're going to continue to get away with it until we stand up and call them out. But we need a united, respectful community to do it. And that's where the focus has to be. And that's why I've been sharing this information with you for so long now. And they get away with so much, folks. They do. They lie about so many things, and they get away with so much. What about this Ebola scare we're seeing all around the planet? Isn't it interesting that the American CDC actually owns the patent on the Ebola virus? Now, am I suggesting that the CDC created the Ebola virus? Well, no, I'm not. However, the patent would suggest that they did. Otherwise, why else would the patent exist? That's the thing. What is that patent doing there? And even all the reports of ISIS that I'm seeing, this terrible terrorist group that appears to be attacking entire suburbs and beheading people, it all just seems like theatre to me, folks. It doesn't seem real. I mean, these people certainly don't seem like Islamic extremists. They're partying, they're drinking, they're doing drugs, they're killing women and children. I mean, somebody tell me where you can find any of these activities listed in the Quran. So they're obviously not any type of Islamic movement, even though the West is claiming them to be so. I would wonder how the news teams are getting in there and getting this footage as well. And as for the beheadings that we've seen, these incredibly and obviously fake beheadings, I mean, what is wrong with these people? I don't know how people could even swallow this stuff. The first one that ever came out, you actually saw this Jihadi Jack character hacking into somebody's neck, and there was no blood at all. And when you hack into a jugular vein, folks, there's a lot of blood, like lots and lots of blood. And there wasn't any blood. And then as soon as he started hacking, they, of course, faded to black. And then we just faded back into a picture of a body with a head sitting on top. I mean, what is this fading to black stuff? Was this the PGR version? They didn't want to offend the people too much. They wanted to make a family version so we could all look at the beheading, could we? I mean, what is this, folks? If someone's going to video a beheading, they don't do a PG version. They film the beheading. And they're so incredibly fake, folks, these videos. And they look like they've been done in front of a blue screen. Even the knives don't match. I mean, there's so many things wrong with these videos. And the legislation that has come about because of these videos would indicate that they were done by the West. They're probably MI5 or MI6 or the CIA or NSA. I mean, someone's done this, Mossad. It's one of the alphabet agencies, folks. It's most certainly not any homegrown terrorist who happens to be beheading reporters. It's simply more theatre for the masses, and very obviously so. I mean, in any of these situations, folks, you've always got to ask qui bono, who benefits? So who is the one who benefits from these Jihadi Jack videos? Who is the ones who benefit from ISIS rampaging across the Middle East? Of course, it's our governments who've been wanting to go in and bomb these countries for a very long time, but have been facing a massive backlash from their citizens. Now, of course, they have a very tidily manufactured terrorist threat, which gives them the reason to go in there. And Jihadi Jack videos, who benefits from someone doing this? Is it some Islamic organization benefits from doing this and putting these videos on TV? Of course not. It's our governments, because they get to enact the type of legislation that they want to enact. So that's who benefits from all of this stuff, folks. There's always someone who benefits from these crimes, and that is always the guilty party. It's called Hegelian dialectic, thesis, antithesis, synthesis. And it's how governments have been bringing in legislation for a very long time. It's how the police state has been built, and it's how the whole control grid functions. And it becomes very obvious to all who actually take the time to look at this with a logical and objective eye. And yes, so that sort of appears to be the state of the world that I've come home to, ladies and gentlemen. It seems to have deteriorated very much while I was away. It was an interesting trip. I went to a lot of countries while I was away. I visited a lot of people, covered a lot of ground, did a number of speaking engagements, and again met pockets of resistance all across the planet. Met people in every country that I went to that are looking for change. But of course, there are still large numbers of people who are asleep. That is the problem. Now, this was intended to be the only show I would actually be doing for the next couple of months, because I had intended to leave Australia in about 3 days' time and head back to Gaza Strip. I've made all of the travel arrangements to actually get there, and I've got people that can get me into Gaza Strip, but the problem that I've come across, the one glitch in the plans that I still need to remedy, is the passage across the Sinai. Because Egypt is now run by a military dictatorship. It's not a democracy anymore. And what I'm hearing is that journalists are being detained who are going across the Sinai. Many of them are having their camera equipment removed from them. So it's very difficult to get cameras into Gaza. And seeing as how the reason I'm going in there is to make a documentary, and there are a number of checkpoints to get through across the Sinai, both on the way there and on the way back, I'm finding the logistics of getting in there to make the film still to be rather difficult, even though I've managed to gain permission to actually enter Gaza Strip, which has been a feat in itself. I tell you, folks, it's certainly been a mission getting this approval to enter. But of course, now I've struck another snag. So this was to be the only show that I was going to do for the next couple of months, but I'm just going to have to see how things go with entry into Gaza. Fortunately, I'm able to float my ticket, so I still have this return flight booked to Cairo that is kind of open-ended. I can go whenever travel arrangements can be worked out, and I'm able to leave it open, so that is a good thing, but I've still got to try to work out this passage across the Sinai region. I have been attempting to get into Gaza for the last couple of months, and it's been very difficult. I've been trying to get in ever since the bombing raids started, and I wanted to go in there with a human shield operation, as soon as the bombing raids started, but it was just impossible to get in. And since the ceasefire has come about, it's also become extremely difficult to gain access into Gaza Strip. Hamas is simply not letting people in. They're not allowing individual sponsorship of visitors to Gaza anymore. And I've managed to find a charity organization within Gaza Strip to actually sponsor my entry, which is why I'm able to get in there with the cameraman to make the documentary that I wish to make. Though, of course, as I said, now I'm simply not able to get across the Sinai in order to do it, though I have got approval to enter Gaza, and since the recent incursion by Israel into Gaza, it has become extremely difficult to gain permission to enter Gaza Strip. This has all come about because of a Jordanian reporter who apparently photographed missile placements in Gaza and relayed the information to Israeli forces, resulting in the obliteration of an entire suburb and the deaths of about 90 people, which was quite disgraceful. And so this is why it's become extremely difficult to actually gain access to Gaza Strip. So I've done what I can to try to get the Gaza Shield delegation in there, but it's simply been impossible. There's a lot of people who really do want to be involved in the situation in Gaza. There's a lot of people who want to go in to help. And I really would like to help that happen, but it's just very difficult at the moment. I also intend to go in there with a delegation of artists who wish to come in and create some type of sculpture out of the remnants of war and create some sort of a monument to honor those who lost their lives in the recent incursions. That's something else that I wish to try to organize. But it has been quite remarkable to even gain entry at all. I had actually intended to move to Gaza Strip sometime early in 2015 and stay there for at least a year if I was able to. But I want to come back and I want to finish the film that I wish to make about Gaza, and I very much want to finish the film about the Amazon that I've been working on for the last year. I've just had so much on my plate that I haven't been able to dedicate the time needed to that production, and so I really do want to get onto that as well. There's so much I wish to achieve in the next 12 months. I really got to start focusing on one task at a time and sit down and put my nose to the grindstone and get these things moving this year. And I thank everybody out there who supported me, and I thank you for your patience in these matters as well. Thank you to anybody who's been waiting patiently for the Full Circle project to take off, because it is going to take off within the next couple of months. So that's something I intend to be putting some focus on. But for now, what we all need to be putting some focus on is our local communities, ladies and gentlemen. Really, that's what we need to be doing. We need to be finding ways of empowering the people around us, and we need to be finding ways of bringing the many questions that we have regarding this system to the attention of people. As I've said recently, attention is the most valuable resource on the planet. It truly is. And it's that which is going to get people's attention that is important. We need to discover what it is, what mechanism can be used to get people's attention to the fact that there's a big problem with this system, and the fact that if we do pool our resources by pooling our collective intention, then we can make a difference. Yeah, but the whole community has to come together to do this, or at least a decent portion of the community. We need to have a strong communal voice, so that we've got a strong communal response to what's going on. And all of this war posturing and the police state that's being built in all of our countries, it's mind-boggling how so many people are buying into it. So many people who simply swallow what the mainstream tells them are buying into this situation. And they're not looking at history. They're not looking at what we've seen in the past from these people. I mean, look at the war in Iraq. There were no weapons of mass destruction to be found in Iraq. Everything that they used as an excuse to go into Iraq turned out to be a lie. And we've had over 1 million civilian casualties as a result, about 1.5 million or even more as a result of this lie. Everything they said about Libya was a lie. Everything they said about Syria was a lie. What makes anybody believe that what they are saying about ISIS could be anything but a lie? Because all these people know how to do is a lie. And all of these lies have brought about the police state that we're seeing growing in all of our countries, and this war posturing and rhetoric that we're seeing overseas, this attempt to push Europe into another war. And these lies just continue and continue. So the question is, how many lies are we prepared to take before we're prepared to stand up and say enough is enough? And we need to bring these lies to the attention of the community. We need to find something that will get this attention so that we've got a strong communal response. We need to have the community stand up and put a stop to this madness. And really, this can only ever start at home. It can only ever start with you. It can only ever start with the individual being prepared to take action. That's the thing. So what we've got to do is spread information to people, but we've got to do it in the right way. We've got to do it in an eloquent and understandable way, a non-confrontational way, which is a very difficult thing to do. It's extremely difficult to bring this information to people in a non-confrontational way because it's highly confrontational information. That's the problem. So as I've so often said, what we need to do is find a way of pushing people towards a doorway so that they can discover things for themselves, because real truth is realized. You can't ever go and tell people the truth. You have to help them discover it for themselves. And Lord knows we certainly have plenty of ammunition that people can use on the path to self-discovery. There's so much to this system now which is so in your face that it's just waking more and more people up. This is what I've said recently as well, is that bring it on, because the more they make the system apparent to people, the more people they wake up. The question is, what are people prepared to do once they wake up? But there is so much out there now that you can use to show people just how corrupt this system is. And what happens when there is no question of authority? What happens when we don't question the actions of our government? What happens when we don't question the stories that are given to us by the mainstream media? What happens when all opposing views to the mainstream are squashed? We just get led down the garden path like we have been. And it's very obvious, folks, that everything is corrupt. It's very obvious that this system is imploding and that the people who are in control of it are running scared. They're seeing so many people wake up around the world, and that's why they're locking the world down. That's why this police state is coming into being, because so many people are waking up to the corruption. It's so much in their face now. And it gets to a point where people simply can't help but see it. The question is, what's it going to take for people who work within the system to actually break ranks and start turning their back on the system and start calling out those who are pulling the strings? It doesn't matter whether there's been all these new anti-whistleblower laws and new legislation and all sorts of stuff brought in. People will be breaking these laws anyway, because you can't outlaw whistleblowing, because if you outlaw whistleblowing, you outlaw government accountability. The simple fact that a government would issue legislation which outlaws whistleblowing indicates that the government is corrupt and they are in abuse of office, they are in abuse of power, and they need to be removed. And it also indicates very much that they are scared of being exposed. This is the only reason why any government would outlaw whistleblowing. Whistleblowing and dissent are not against democracy. Whistleblowing and dissent are essential for democracy to exist. Because without whistleblowing and dissent, there can be no democracy. Not that we've ever seen any real democracy on the earth anyway. I mean, what we have certainly isn't democracy, folks. I don't know what you would call this system. Well, I guess we could just call it fascism with a mask on. That's really what it is, folks. It's thinly disguised fascism, disguised as democracy, disguised as being a republic, disguised as whatever they can disguise it as. But ultimately, it's just a fascist dictatorship, a functional, rotational dictatorship where we get to elect a new CEO for the corporate slavery system every few years. That's what we've got, and I don't know what it is, but it certainly is not democracy. And folks, if you think it is a democracy, just take a look at some of the legislation that's been brought in your country. Some of the legislation that's been brought in my country, the new anti-terror laws in response to these fake beheadings have been absolutely incredible. New national security legislation which gives the police the ability to break into anybody's home, use their neighbour's property to break in, disguise themselves to break in and search anybody's property, execute a warrant against anybody and not tell them for 6 months after they've searched it. Which, of course, gives them the ability to go into anybody's house and plant any type of evidence they wish to plant, so they can come back 6 months later and bust them for whatever they wish to bust them for. This is absolute corruption, folks, and this is what is being brought in Australia to keep us safe. The question is, who's going to keep us safe from the fascist little cretin who's taken up the reins of Prime Minister in this country? And let there be no mistake that Tony Abbott is a fascist little cretin, folks. That's exactly what he is. He's almost like some sort of genetic mutation. He certainly doesn't appear to be anything that could be vaguely construed as human, that's for sure. And he certainly does not have the best interests of his citizens at heart. Even getting Australia involved in bombing raids against Iraq, I mean, what on earth does it have to do with us? We are bombing another country due to some fake beheadings and thereby making Australia a terrorist target. This is not the act of a sane and rational mind. It's the act of, well, Tony Abbott, what can I say? As I've said so many times in the past, Tony Abbott is in many ways the best thing that ever happened to Australia because he is the worst thing that ever happened to Australia. And the actions of the Tony Abbott regime and the brutality of his mindset, the sociopathic nature of the man, has served to wake up more people than I ever could. And most of the country can now see just how corrupt this system is. They can see how little regard the government has for their own personal security. And they can see just how much the government likes to steal from them. And they can see just where we're going. So in many ways, it's a good thing that Tony Abbott has come to power because he is demonstrating just how corrupt this system is. The question is, how much are the Australian people prepared to take? And when they do wake up again, what are they waking up into? Because we don't want violent revolution. What we want is an empowered community. And this can only really come from respect. Now, one of the things that really struck me during my recent travels about the place was the smallness of the world. The fact that what we really have here is one big community. Everywhere I go, everywhere I went, I met people who are all basically the same. They may look a little different, they may speak different languages, but they all have their own beauty, they all want something better, and they're all caught in the wheels and caught within the mechanism of a system that is not of their own making. The real problem that we have with the system is, of course, those who work within its parameters, those who are constrained by it, mainly the politicians, the police, the government people, those who work in government positions and who believe the system is real, the lawyers, the banksters, all of these sorts of people, and many people in the lower echelons of the banking system. I mean, these aren't evil people, and it's the same with the government systems. Many people that work within the lower echelons of these systems are not evil people. They're just people looking for a way through the world. They're people with a left brain perspective who've gotten onto that academic path, and they're doing the best they can to find a way through it. And once they get into that system, they get caught up within its parameters, it's very confusing for them, so it's very difficult for them to find their way out, and it's very difficult for them to step back and view the world holistically because they're caught up in their own little bubble because of the paper and the perspective and the books and the stuff that they're subject to every day. So the difficult thing is finding the way to shift the paradigm with these people, to help these people understand that they're working within a fictional system and that the system itself is what is destroying the planet. The system itself is what is locking humankind down. It's almost like the politicians and the police are like its immune system, its defense mechanism. And the tricky part is getting the people who work within these institutions to wake up to that fact and to view the world from a more human perspective. Because that's something this system does, is it removes people's humanity from them, and it causes them to view the world from within the constraints of a system which is essentially sociopathic, a system which is designed to essentially remove people's humanity from them. It's a system that trains people to be good little cogs that function well in the big machine, and that's about all. Anything outside that, the system is not interested in. So it's getting people to rediscover their humanity from within the system. That's the tricky part. But I really believe that if we've got a strong communal response to the things this system is doing, then the many people who work within the system will eventually wake up to themselves and think, well, hang on, we've got the whole community here standing up against this handful of people in government that want to bring this legislation in. Why am I here obeying these few people and repressing all of my sisters and brothers and family and all the people here that I'm part of this community as well? Why am I oppressing this community at the behest of this handful of people, when really what I'm doing is oppressing the world? What I'm doing is creating a world that is worse than the world that we're in now. It's getting people to the point where they're going to understand this and see this. It's getting these people who work within the system to start viewing themselves as humans again and start viewing themselves as being part of the general community that they live in again. Of course, it's very difficult with police officers. This is why they move police around the country all the time. You notice that most of the police that work in your local town don't come from your local town, because they don't like police forming relationships and friendships with people. They don't like your police to be friends of your community. They like police to come from outside the community so they have no problem enforcing themselves upon the community. And if they stay there for long enough that they start becoming friends with people, then they get transferred around the country to other places. So they're always kept in a position where they're kept separate from the community. You'll find most of the police in your community do not come from that community. And that is done very much on purpose, very much by design, and it's one of the big problems that we face. So it's finding a way of reconnecting these police officers and these lawyers and these political people to the actual communities that they're living in. Again, as I said, viewing themselves from a more human perspective, rather than from a simple machine perspective, rather than viewing themselves as simply being a law enforcement officer. They have to view themselves first as being a human being, because this is the biggest problem we face. I mean, the police are the front line, and that's one of the biggest threats we face as a society, unfortunately, is the actions of our police, because it's our police who are always enforcing this corrupt legislation which has been brought in by governments, all of which is designed to remove the rights of the people under the guise of keeping them safe or protecting the environment or whatever other excuse they can cook up. The unfortunate thing is the police simply buy into it and they carry it out and they uphold this legislation regardless of what it is. They don't question it, they just uphold it, and that is the problem. So again, folks, it's finding a way to help these people reestablish their own humanity, which is a very difficult task, of course, because even suggesting to people that they've lost touch with their humanity, many people will see this as an affront to their ego, and they will want to attack you for even suggesting such a thing. Unfortunately, this is the type of programming that we have to deal with. That's something else that became very apparent to me while I was traveling around as well, because I was very much an observer on this trip. I didn't really interact that much with many of the places that I was. I kind of sat back and observed most of the company that I was in and most of the situations that I was in. And what struck me with people was the different programming that they undergo in their different countries and the different levels of programming that you see in certain countries. There's certainly a lot in Europe. There's a lot of programming that goes on in Europe, and there's certainly a lot of different ethnic idiosyncrasies, if you will, between the various countries throughout Europe. It's quite amazing, actually, for me to see this, because I can travel around Europe and feel like I haven't really traveled anywhere. No matter how many countries I go to, I still feel like I've just kind of driven down the road a little bit or just gone down the street a little bit. I don't feel like I've gone to another country, because Europe, with all of the countries it contains, is in fact only half the size of the country that I live in. I mean, you can fit all of Europe inside Australia and still have half of the country left over. So for me, it's like driving from Byron Bay to Brisbane to do some shopping. And if I'm in Europe, I've driven from one country to another. So it's a whole different perspective for me. And I don't feel like I'm traveling when I'm in Europe. No matter how many countries I go to, I still feel like I'm in the same place. And it's interesting dealing with different ethnic idiosyncrasies. Every few miles, every border that I cross, I come across different people with a different way of life and a different language and a different nationality and a different way of doing things, a different set of legislation and a different type of communal pride. It's very interesting to see. And all these people are very often running different programs, although there is essentially one program running through the whole EU. I guess there's one program running through the whole Western world, really. But it was really interesting to see the level of programming with people and the fear that many people in Europe have of their governments, their fear of authority. Europe is, in fact, quite an oppressive place, I've discovered, or that's the way I feel when I'm there anyway. I don't think that it's quite as free as people pretend. Perhaps it's just me. Perhaps I'm just picking up on the residual energy of the place. After all, it has been through hundreds of years, literally centuries of warfare. And it seems to feel like people are kind of looking over their shoulders, waiting for the next army to march in from somewhere and waiting for their government to do something terrible, because these governments have such a track record of doing terrible things. So that's just the way I feel when I'm in Europe. It's an interesting sort of an energy, and I'm still not quite sure how I feel about it, but it's something that I'm not entirely comfortable with. It just feels a little alien to me, I suppose. Perhaps it's the sheer concentration of people as well, because that, of course, is something that I don't have to deal with here in Australia. That's the first thing that you notice when you come back to Australia, folks, is the amount of space that we have here. Even when you come out of the airport and you get onto the roads, you see that there's just all of these gaps between the traffic and between the cars, and there's all of these spaces between the people on the sidewalks, and there's so much room that we have here, and that's something that you don't have in the European part of the world. So perhaps it's simply the residual energy of the amount of people that I'm picking up on as well. But I was very much in observer mode during the last journey, folks. I didn't really say too much to a lot of people. I just kind of sat back and watched things and checked it out and just kind of felt the energy flow and just watched how people reacted to situations. And it was quite an interesting journey. I'm not sure how many more travels I will do, how many more speaking tours I will do. Maybe one more. But that may be about it, I think. I'm getting a little bit tired of travelling. I actually travelled for most of my life as a musician, and I gave up being a musician because I got sick of travelling. And now I appear to be travelling again, which is an interesting type of a scenario to have fallen into, and something that I didn't really plan on doing. But we'll just see how we go. I'll actually be speaking at the Rainbow Serpent Festival in Victoria next year as well, in late January, for anybody who will be in the area. If you happen to be in Victoria, Australia, that will be the next time I will be speaking anywhere. And I don't have any other dates planned for anything after that, so I'll just mainly be doing the radio show and working on the films. That will be the focus of the next couple of months, folks, unless I'm actually able to find safe passage across the Sinai and gain access into Gaza. The focus of the next couple of months will be working on the film that I've been working on for the last year and launching the Full Circle project. And look, one of the focuses of the Full Circle project must be to address this economic system. It must be to alert people to the fact of what this economic model is doing, because to continue to support this economic model means to destroy the world, basically, or to destroy this world's ability to support human life. That can be the only result of continuing to support this economic system. Because having an economic system which is based on a scenario of permanent growth means what we end up doing is harvesting resources from the planet, constructing items out of it that are designed to fail and break and end up on a rubbish tip. And we do this in order to keep the system turning over so we can keep creating new items. So essentially we're harvesting resources from the planet and we're turning it into rubbish. And we're going to continue on this path until we have harvested every resource this planet has and turned the entire planet into a refuse tip. And we need to pay attention to that fact, folks, because that fact is the only result, the only possible result of continuing to support this economic system. And it's got to the point where the people have to stand up and say enough is enough. You know, that's how we protect the environment, folks. It isn't a fact that we have to stop consuming certain products and all this sort of stuff. We've got to stop supporting this economic model. all of the products that we consume could be manufactured differently. They could be manufactured to last. It's the fact that we can't manufacture things to last because we need to support a system based on permanent growth. That is the root cause of the problem. That is a root cause of all of the environmental degradation, the destruction, the wars, everything. It's all to support this economic model, because this economic model places people in a state of artificial manufactured scarcity, which is designed to destroy the planet in order to support numbers on a screen. And when I say destroy the planet, well, it won't destroy the planet, but it will destroy the planet's ability to support us. So what we'll do is we will destroy our own habitat. We'll destroy this planet's ability to support human life. And we'll do this ourselves by our belief that this fictional economic system is real and that this fictional economic system has more value than human life. And we need to wake people up to this fact, folks. This is a pretty disgraceful state of affairs to find ourselves in. I mean, human consciousness is capable of so many things. We have so much potential. I want to see us embrace this potential. I can see the potential that we've got, and I think it would be a shame to squander that potential. And that's why I do what I do. But we need to pay attention to what we're doing, and we need to stand up and call a spade and not be in fear of doing so. We need to be able to stand up and simply state things as being the way they are, not being politically correct. Political correctness is a form of tyranny, folks. It really is. You can't censor what you say. You can't censor what you think. You can't not say things because you may offend people. I mean, this whole system to me is offensive. I find this entire system offensive, and I will say so, and I have no problem in saying so, because it offends me not to say so. So if me saying so is offensive, well, I'm sorry, but I'm forced to do so by this offensive system. So it just depends on how you look at things, folks. But that's the way I look at it. I find the government going and bombing another country because of fake beheadings offensive. I find the government enslaving its population to a system of debt slavery to be offensive. I find the government fracking and destroying the groundwater in the process to be offensive. I find the actions of the mainstream media in not reporting the truth to the people and not reporting the news from an objective perspective to be offensive. I find the lies that we're constantly told to be offensive. I find the government's actions towards the Australian Aboriginal to be offensive. I find Israel's actions towards the Palestinians to be offensive. I find the support that they get from the rest of the world to be offensive. I find all of these things to be offensive. I find the system itself to be offensive. And if I am deemed to be offensive by saying so, well, I'm sorry, but I will not stand for this offensive system anymore without saying something about it. And the thing is that so much of this is distraction, folks. So much of what we're seeing in the world today is distraction. ISIS is a distraction. It's to distract you from what they're doing in Ukraine. It's to distract you from what they want to do in Syria. It's to distract you from what they're doing in your own countries. I mean, Ebola, like I said, the CDC owns the patent on Ebola, so where did that come from? Missing aircrafts, ISIS, all of this stuff is distractions, folks. It's to distract you from the rampant psychopaths who are running this planet into the ground and just burning and scorching the entire earth and staining it with the blood of as many people as they can. That's what these people are doing, folks. That's what this criminal system is doing. And really, the mainstream media, what happened to the media, folks? We used to have a media that actually reported the news, and now we have a media which is the unofficial mouthpiece of government. It's the government-run propaganda machine. That's all it is. But at least more and more people are waking up to it. So yes, that is about the state of the world today, folks. That's, as I said, the world that I've come home to after my peregrinations. We certainly do find ourselves in a bit of a pickle. But we can continue to keep up the fight. We can continue to make noise. We can continue to rock the boat. We can continue to alert as many people as will listen. I have seen some really positive responses all around the planet. I have seen some good turnouts at some of the events that I spoke at, and I have seen a lot of people who are prepared to put things into action and stand up and begin to make a difference. I've seen a lot of people that are beginning to realize that All of these things can be used to get the attention of the public, and as I said, attention is the most valuable resource we have. And we've got so much at our disposal now, folks. There are so many things that are alerting people to the corruption of this system that we can almost go in any direction we want in waking people up. We've just got so many tools at our disposal. So do use some of these tools, folks. Don't think that you can't make a difference, because every difference that's ever happened on this planet has been ultimately due to the actions of one person who started the movement. As I said recently in one of my talks, the problem is that we wait for great people to do great things. We don't realize that great things are also done by little people. We don't believe that we are capable of doing great things, but we are, because ultimately everybody on the planet is born with the same capabilities, folks. Everybody on the planet is born with the same possibility of greatness. All you have to do is to have an idea and be prepared to put it into practice. Not be scared to be who you are. Not be scared to embrace the art of your life. And to do the right thing in all that you say and do. And to stand and make a difference in the world. We don't need violence. We don't need war. We don't need to overthrow anything. We don't need to deconstruct anything. All we need to do is to rediscover ourselves and be prepared to stand in the art of our own lives. And I know this may sound esoteric and new age or something to some people, but really, if you stop and think about what I just said, you may feel the truth of it. That's the thing, you know, like, we've got to understand what we are, folks. We've got to learn to express the art of our lives and realize that that's what we are. We're an artistic expression of creation. I go through this so many times, and the reason I do is because I believe it breaks down barriers with people. I think that's the biggest problem that we face, is the barriers we have with each other in our community. This is the ultimate problem to the whole thing. This is the ultimate obstacle to human freedom, is the perceived division in our societies, how we judge each other poorly because we see other people as being different to ourselves and we view that which is different as being bad. You know, when really each person is their own artistic expression of creation, why can't we see that? And if we could see that, then suddenly we would respect these people and we'd have friends and we'd have a respectful community that could stand up and have a strong communal response to anything government wants to do. But because we've got these divided societies, we never get anywhere. We wait for a new movement to come along, something we can join. Okay, I'll go and sign up for this, and because I've signed up for it, then someone's now going to email me instructions about what I can do to save the world. But we continue to judge each other because we continue to judge ourselves poorly, because we continue to measure ourselves by fictional parameters. We don't step back and view this whole situation holistically. And so we never get anywhere. The problem is never solved. We have to change our perspective, folks. And once we do that, then we don't have to deconstruct anything. We don't have to join any movement. All you have to do is change the way we apply ourselves to the world in which we live, change the way we apply ourselves to our community at large, and the world must change with us. That's the thing. But we've got to be prepared to do it. We've got to be prepared to talk about this sort of stuff with people. Now, you can go out and lead by example in your community by doing this sort of thing, but you need to have meetings and be talking to people about this sort of stuff. And you need to be showing respect for each other. I mean, it's a tall order sometimes in our societies, I know. We've got societies which are designed in such a way as to almost breed contempt with people, to make sure that people are always kept at loggerheads with everybody else around them. And that's a construct of this society, and people react to these situations in pre-programmed ways. But being aware of this is half the problem. If you can see that that's the way it is and simply be a nice guy, simply be a nice person, sometimes you can find a way through it. Sometimes you can break down these barriers that people have just because you're a nice guy, just because you don't have any stuff with them. You know, but always respect people. Always respect people in their own ground and in their own space, and understand that some of their ideas they have, even though they may be wrong, they've got these ideas because of the information that they've assimilated at the time. So you can't argue with them about them. You've got to try to approach it respectfully and approach the discussion respectfully and listen to what their ideas are, even if they're wrong. I mean, maybe they're not wrong. Maybe there's stuff in there that you need to listen to. So you've really got to remain objective when discussing things with people. But above all, folks, you've got to be friends with people. You've got to understand what people are by understanding what you are, and understand that what they're demonstrating to you and what they're showing you is their art of expressing themselves, their art of viewing the world, their way of looking at things. This is all art, folks. All of it is art. The same as you. Everything that you do is art. When we can see this, we can understand that people have different perspectives, and they have to have different perspectives, and of course they do, because they're completely different people. And that's the way it works. And we need to be able to respect all of these views and bring it all together and put everything on the table and open it up for discussion and get rid of all of the preconceived notions we've had about anything and get rid of all of our ethnic division and our racial division and our religious division and all of the divisions that have been manufactured for us. We've got to get rid of all of these things, folks, because they're all constructs and they're all used to keep us divided. And in fact, that's what they've all been designed for. Specifically to keep us divided. You know, divide and conquer, folks. Everything about this system is designed to perpetuate that meme. And that is the big clue, because that is the big solution. All we have to do is to realize who and what we are and be wary enough of the warrior spirit to respect each other and to be able to stand your own ground and stand on your own beliefs, but to be able to respect others. That's the key, folks. But don't take a backward step to people who believe they have authority over you. Don't take a backward step to anybody who may cause you to deviate from your moral compass. Do the right thing in all that you do. Stand up for what is right, and you'll make a difference. And if we all do it, folks, we could change the world in a day. I really believe that. But we've very much lost our warrior spirit. We have. We've forgotten what it means to be a warrior. We've forgotten what it feels like. We've forgotten what it is to be a warrior. We think these days a warrior is someone who goes out and carries out acts of war. But that's not true. A warrior is someone who stands in integrity and who will not back down to corruption, will not back down to that which is not just, that which is not good, and that which does not serve the greater interest of the whole. That's what a warrior is, and we need to embrace that, folks. We need to get that back, because if we can get that back, then we can change the direction that this world is going. And God knows we very much need to change the direction that we're going in. I mean, we can sit here and talk about how bad things are getting and how much the world is waking up and how much confidence we have in humanity to step up to the plate. But unless they do it soon, we're going to find that we're in deep trouble. And in fact, we're already in a reasonable amount of difficulty now, folks. Just have a look around you at the state of the world. Have a look at what your governments are doing, because we certainly do need to pay attention and we do need to start stepping up and making a difference, but we need to be doing it in the right way. But really the question is, what are you prepared to do, folks? Are you prepared to stand up and make a difference and do the right thing in all that you do and to spread the word throughout your community? Because that's what we need people to do. And if people are willing to step up and do this on a grassroots level in their own community, then we can make a difference. But we need to act now. But look, that is it for me, folks. We've reached the end of the show. It's been a pleasure to come back on the air and talk to you again. Thank you to anybody who's ever made a contribution to the website and to thecrowhouse.com. Folks, they are few and far between at the moment. I could really use some support at the moment. If you are able to make a contribution, it would be great. But thank you very much for joining me on the air today. I look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take good care until then. In Lakesh.